Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. All right, Joe, we got a special guest joining us right now. Very excited to talk once again with Larry Zonka, who has a book out, Head On, a memoir, and going to be at the Miami Book Fair, by the way. You can get more information on that, miamibookfair.com. But it's going to be Saturday, November 19th, 11 a.m. It's a conversation with Larry Zonka and Dave Barry, going to be there as well. Should be very, very fun for fans out there. Larry,
nobody tells stories.
I know.
Like Larry Zonka.
I'm excited.
Everyone's a $50,000 speech, man. Every one of them. He's good.
Zonka, thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Hey, I'm glad to be on. I'm looking forward to meeting with Dave Barry. Well, as much as I used to look forward to meetings with Don Shula, you know, it's just no matter what you go in and what you got on your mind and how you plan to settle it, Don Shula and Dave Barry are two guys that can just turn the whole thing around. You come out just shaking your head.
You know. I try to get, every time I think of you and Coach Shula, as close as you guys were, you had your moments where you saw things differently. Did you ever win any of those, or did you ever at least walk out of one of those one-on-ones thinking, okay, I felt like I got my point across today?
Joe, so help me, what I'm telling you is the truth. I never won once. Not once. One time, the last few times there, we were going around in 79, my last year I played for him. I said, you know, just once, I'd like to get the last word. He was silent for a minute. It was just he and I in his room, in his office in there. You know, you could say anything that was on your mind in that office. Outside, you had to address him as the general. But in his office, it was just man to man. And I said, you know, just once, Don, just once, I'd like to be able to say that I got the last word. He said, when you finally get the last word, you're not going to want it. And I thought, I walked out scratching my head. I thought, what the heck's he talking about? You know, I've been trying to get the last word for 12 years, you know. When he passed and they asked me to do the speech there about it after he passed, I realized what he was talking about. You know, that's when it dawned on me. When I finally got the last word, I really didn't want it. He was right again.
Yeah, wow, that's There's so many great, the personalities, and you know, I went back and was looking at the stats of that 17-0 season. Larry, you know what's amazing was, I know all the Hall of Famers on the offensive side of the ball, the no-name defense with 26 picks and gave up 12 points a game. Wow, were they good.
Seven mental errors the entire season. The 72 Dolphins defense is the most overlooked defense in the history of the NFL. And it's a shame. Manny Fernandez, you know, the list just, Nick Bonacani, the list just goes on and on. And, you know, I think the only reason about that was we had ball control offense. We got on the field and we would just run, you know, take three quarters of the quarter and burn up the clock.
Right.
And then they'd come out for three plays, get the ball back, and we'd do it again. So they spent most of their time on the bench. And that's the mark of a great defense, is they're not on the field a whole lot.
Yeah.
And because of that, we were pumped up as being the heroes of the 72 team. And the reality, and all ball players, yourself included, you know what I'm talking about. The real test came when our defense walked on that field and got that ball back for us.
Larry, I got to ask you this because it comes up every time. It obviously came up last week when the last team, undefeated team, loses and they either show a picture of you guys with the champagne or you tweet something out or put something on social media. People just make such a big deal of it. I'm born and raised here in South Florida. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's ours, and I love that stuff. But everyone around the country, man, they always make such a big deal. Oh, there's the old guys again doing the – I mean,
glad we lost. Yeah. Real glad we lost,
Zonk,
again.
Thank you for doing it from everyone in South Florida.
We do it because that's when we come back to life. That gives us the eternal life right there. We're,
love it.
You know, we're the guys that spring up from the dust and say, hey, we're back competing again. You're getting close. We're going to put the hex on you. And we're going to celebrate your loss. You know, I enjoyed it this last time, particularly because Washington's pulled us out. Well, a couple of times, and that's funny because Washington's the team that went down that gave us the perfect season, and they've helped us defend it on two different occasions in the last 20 years or so.
You know, of all the things of Larry Zonka and all the stuff, when you decided and this thing was over, you were going to go to Alaska. You weren't messing around when you said you were going to go to Alaska. Like, you spent a lot of time. I've heard you talk about how beautiful and how much it meant to you. Larry, talk about that. Going from South Florida, where you had just done all these great things in your career, and you go, nah, it's time to go to Alaska.
Joe, I'm going to tell you something. I grew up from the time I was 9 years old. I cover it in a book. I just had a vision. My mother brought me a magazine with a picture of a grizzly bear on the front of it on Kodiak Island there in probably 1957, 1956. And I just read that story over and over and just kept that magazine forever. I dreamt about getting to Alaska, the last frontier, Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett, the whole smear.
Wow.
I grew up doing that, but I got, you know, there's no way to get to Alaska. I got playing football, offered a scholarship. My life went the way it went. I'm not complaining. You know, I'm a very lucky, very blessed guy, and got to the right places, did the right things. And then the opportunity presented itself in the middle 80s, and I jumped into it, eased into it, got into it through promotion of products and being able to celebrate hunting and fishing on the air with some different, Kurt Gowdy and a bunch of different people helped me get into it. And then the opportunity presented itself to do the outdoor show, and I just honed in on Alaska, and they offered me other places. They wanted me to do it in different places, you know, South America, different places. I said, nope. If you want me to do it, I'm doing it in Alaska. That's the only place I'm going to do it, because I dreamt about it all my life and finally got an opportunity and went there, and it was as wild and woolly as I had dreamt of.
Wow. On top of that, I still think of the documentary or the special they had where you finally got Mercury Morse and Jim Kick, God bless him, we lost them, both of them to go all the way back there to be with you, man. Oh, my God, that had to be unbelievable.
You talk about a couple of guys or fish out of water. Mercury Morse and Jim Kick in the middle of Alaska. Jim Kick grew up in New Jersey, you know, and both of you know how fast Mercury thinks and how quick he. The patience to fish or hunt with either one of those guys is almost non-existent, you know. And when I put them on a river where you just, there's so many fish in that river, you can't help but catch a fish. Jim Kick caught one, and Mercury hooked one, and he took off, and he passed the fish. They were both going upstream, but Mercury passed the fish. And I'm screaming at him, stop, stop. You know, you just had to be there to appreciate it. Each caught a beautiful trout, but it took several hours to get it done. And then they went back, and we sat. They had a little beer place and a little place to shoot pool in the lodge that we were staying in. And that's when we had the most fun of all. We started sitting there having a beer, and Jim Kick's memory had a lot of problems there at the end of his career, end of his life, but he was perfect in the past. He remembered things back from 20 or 30 years ago very clearly. And he and Merck got trading quips on different times when they passed each other going on and off the field and who did what, which time. And I just got tickled. I sat there and watched him for a better part of an hour. I wished I would have filmed that instead of the fishing.
You know, it is so funny because that relationship was talked about a lot, that you and Jim were so close. And then Merck was such a big part of it. And then I only know the part where all three of you guys were so close, and Merck and Jim, Mercury checked on Jim Kick all the time in the relationship. Can you just talk about where that thing started to, I mean, it was unbelievable at the end.
Well, when Shula came in 70, you know, and we went through the 70 season and the 71 season, Merck was just returning kickoffs. And when we lost the Super Bowl VI, we, you know, Monty Clark had a lot to do with that. Monty Clark was, our offensive line coach, who played at Cleveland for years and years, blocked for Jimmy Brown, great offensive mind. He came to Shula and said, you know, we've got a third dimension here, just like the old Green Bay Packers used to have, if we're smart enough to utilize it. And Shula said, what's that? And Monty Clark proceeded to tell him, if we, you know, free substitution, open substitution means that we can trade Jim and Merck in and out of there. And in long yardage situations, we can have Mercury Morse in there in an I-4 mission, just like Green Bay used to do. And that started it. Now, those two guys pitted against each other as who was first team and who wasn't. You can understand how that would lead to a lot of animosity and a lot of unfriendly situation. Instead, Merck and Jim rose above that. and became best friends. They both vied and wanted to be on the field all the time. They still competed for that. But at the same time, it made them closer, which is very unusual. It shows you the deepness of their character, the class they both had. So the three of us got to be just that, a threesome. And it just came to fruition. I'm glad you brought that up about when they came up to Alaska. That is the best time I've ever had with Jim Kick and Mercury wow. Morse, you know, outside of Super Bowl VII. That's the best day or 2 days that I ever experienced with them, and we got it on tape.
That's awesome. That is wow. truly awesome. Larry, how much fun did you have, or how nice was that weekend just a couple weeks back, just a tribute to the 72 team and seeing a lot of your former teammates and just having – everything about you guys that weekend?
Well, a 50-year reunion is just that. At the same time, you know, we all show up glad to see each other and looking, you know, and laughing at each other for being gray-haired and walking with canes and things. But then the stories start.
Right.
And then you the transformation takes place, and suddenly we're back in 72 arguing about who did what when. And that gets heated, and it gets funny. And I think the wives get in, particularly the wives and girlfriends, really get a kick out of it because telling stories on each other, you know, it's you put Doug Cruzan and Mercury Morris in the room together. Stir them up and then sit back and wait. they both just have a great way of remembering and laying a story down, so it's really humorous.
You know, it's amazing they got the guys from the Steelers to come in and talk about that game before they went off and had their own great run of their own a little bit later on and what they learned from you guys. But getting Mean Joe Green and some of the great Hall of Famers up there talking about what you guys did, I just thought I was blown away, first of all, that they'd all come and be such good sports about trying to tackle you and saying and you getting up saying, I'll see you on the next play. And I just thought some of those stories were unbelievable, trying to tackle you and all that stuff was really fun.
Well, we need to make one thing perfectly clear before we go on. Joe Green did not attempt to tackle me. He tackled me. If I could get Bob Kuchenberg between me and Joe Green, then I had a shot at maybe getting by Joe without being completely tackled. But, you know, one-on-one, Joe Green, you know, I don't know of anybody that ever put Joe down or put him on his back. That just didn't happen. But at the same time, you having a great offensive line and being able to do that. Mel Blount was there. There was other fellas that were there from our past that what a great idea to bring them in, and what, how, you know, it really reflects the depth of their personality and their sense of humor to come in and talk about that perfect season when they weren't part of it. They were the foe, but you couldn't ask for two or three better guys to sit down and give you a critique on it than those guys that were there.
Larry, I got to ask you about playing at the old Orange Bowl. When I got here, it was special seeing what you guys had done. Can you talk a little bit about coming here, and there you are in the Orange Bowl, and that thing was rocking and rolling?
I loved it. The Orange Bowl was just that, a bowl. It was, the fans were very close to the field. That's where the 12th man syndrome started. Literally on third down, if you're the opposing team and you're down close to your own end zone or our end zone, and they're looking to drive in, the noise was so loud it vibrated on the benches. If anyone's been in there during a game, you know what it was like. It was so loud, and our fans just went overboard with it. It just didn't cease. I mean, you couldn't. You know what was great is if we went down to the other end zone and we're about to go in, and Bob Greasy or Earl Morrow put his hands up, it sounded like a funeral parlor. I mean, it just went totally quiet. Well, when you have that kind of control and that kind of understanding, if other teams didn't prepare for that, if they didn't work out some kind of hand signals, they were at a real loss. And that helped us. That gave us what Shula was always talking about, that little bit of a winning edge. The fans were involved in 72. Believe me. Trust me.
Well, the other part of that is, and I heard you say this on an interview, I cheated a little bit, but how you brought this community together with so much junk that was going on back there, and for everybody to really enjoy what you guys have put together in the early 70s with all that winning. And maybe we can all learn from a little something there, I thought was really great.
Well, we're all Americans, and there was a great dividedness, particularly in Miami. The different, you know, the Spanish, the black, all the divisions that were possible were there, and there was riots and different things going on. But the one thing they could all get together about, and that Orange Bowl was right in the heart of what the area I'm talking about, was the football team. And Shula came, and we started to win, and it gave them something in common. It gave a bunch of divided Americans something in common that they all liked. And when they started talking and getting around that, they discovered that the other people that they were having all their trouble with, in the bottom line, were just like them. We're all the same. And once that started, that characteristic started to work in the crowd. You know, back then, the players came in. We didn't park in a special parking lot. We just had parking slips. We parked in amongst everybody. And the tailgate parties started. That's where tailgating had its beginning, I believe, there in Green Bay, a couple other places. But the players, we'd come out, and after the game, instead of trying to run off, we would sit with the fans and sit around and have hot dogs and drink cold beer and talk about things. I remember the Miami police used to come in and say, "This, fellas, this is a city venue. We have to close this at 11 o'clock. And we say, "Oh, sit down, have a Coke, have a hot dog." And we'd be there till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning before we left with several hundred different fans, you know, wow. And sometimes more than that. But that kind of community togetherness, instead of finding things to argue about and things to be decisive about, divided about, you find something in common that you all enjoy. And it starts to grow from there. And I don't think we were any kind of, government official type capacity. We were just a common thread amongst them. And pretty soon we all learned that we had a common denominator. We all wanted to win at football. And it gave us something that was a positive mode to shift to take the attention off all the divisive things that we're about.
Well, the book is Head On. It's a memoir by Larry Zonka. This is the legend Larry Zonka on the line with us right now. And Saturday, 11 a.m. at the Miami Book Fair, Miami-Dade College and the Chapman Conference Center, Larry Zonka with Dave Barry, a conversation. And you could go there now. Go to MiamiBookFair.com for more information on all that. Larry, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and speak for Joe, but this has been a pleasure. This has been
Larry,
awesome.
Larry, we could do this all the time right. When you're bored. We could just call and they go, "Oh, damn it, they're calling me again." So we won't do that. But, Larry, I got to tell you one last thing. I love Audrey. She is fantastic, and I can't say enough.
I do, too.
Yeah, I know you do.
I do, too, and I'm glad she's kind of tough, too, because she made me stayed after me and made me come to realize I need to do that memoir. And I'm glad I did it because it's a fun story. I read it myself. I get tickled just reading the book over and over, because it really does cover some funny stuff and funny happening. There's some serious stuff that you alluded to, the Barry C, different things. But there's also some really humorous parts. Shula's office was just a circus. So you guys, Joe, you know exactly.
Oh,
what
I've been
I'm
in there
about.
For all the wrong reasons. Yeah, no, I know, Larry. Yeah, but it sounds a lot better coming from you than me. Larry, thank you. I appreciate it very much,
thank
Larry.
You, fellas.
All right.
See ya.
Larry Zonka, the legend, joining us on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. By the way, MiamiBookFair.com is the website to give more information. Saturday, 11 a.m., Larry Zonka with Dave Barry, a conversation.
Yeah.
That's going to be
good stuff. Yeah. Getting Zonk back down here is always good.
Wow.
Hey, we got to take a quick break here. We're behind a little bit, but worth every minute of it. We'll be right back.